Mr. Kaczynski. Mr. Hawley.
Here.
Mr. Dougherty.
Here.
Mr. McGoldrick. Ms. DePasqua.
Here.
Dr. Zuzalo.
Here.
Mr. Drosko. Ms. Majewski. Mr. Curtis.
Here.
Mr. Neff.
Here.
Ms. Walters.
Here.
Mr. Barrymore.
Here.
Mr. Harala.
Here.
For the chair and the vice chair are both suffering from physical issues, seeing from self-illness. So we don't have a chair or vice chair, so it is appropriate at this time then for the board to elect a temporary chair to run the meeting. It has to come from one of the class four members. The chair has suggested that Dr. Zuzalo be the person to run the meeting. She's been here for a while, understands the process, and knows how to conduct a meeting, and we're looking for a motion and a second to elect her as a temporary chair.
I'll make a motion.
I'll second.
And we need a roll call.
I'm sorry, I'm just trying to see who's here, who's not. Mr. Hawley.
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty.
Yes, thank you.
Ms. DePasqua.
Yes.
Dr. Zuzalo.
Yes. I feel like I have to.
Mr. Curtis.
Yes.
Mr. Neff.
Yes.
Ms. Walter.
Yes.
Mr. Barrymore.
Yes.
And Mr. Harala.
Yes.
Very good. So that having been done, I'm going to just a procedural notice.
Thank you all for that. Pursuant to Section 5 of the Open Public Meetings Act, this meeting has been duly advertised in accordance with the law by publication in the official newspapers of the borough and by posting in Borough Hall by the borough clerk as part of the annual notice. This meeting is a quasi-judicial proceeding, and any comments or questions must be limited to issues that are relevant to what the board may legally consider in reaching a decision. Decorum appropriate to a judicial hearing must be maintained at all times.
At this time, we'll need the silent prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You are in the meeting, Lord.
It's always a good reminder.
This is a point in time for the public comment of items not on the agenda this evening. If anyone has a comment on an item that's not an agenda item, please step forward at this time. Seeing none, the next item on the agenda is pending litigation, and I'm pleased to report that there is none. And other business includes a consistency review for standby generators. You received the ordinance to basically tweak and hopefully improve your generator requirements. And the board has to make a determination as to whether it's consistent or inconsistent with the master plan. I don't see anything that's inconsistent. There's nothing in the master plan that would be in opposition to what is being proposed as to the ordinance amendment. But it's up to the board to consider that. Is there any discussion on that?
Well, read it over. It's pretty straightforward. Makes it a lot easier for the residents to navigate the process. So, very good. Good job, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Mr. Neff had one email suggestion that I thought was a very good one. Under, and I could just share this with the board, under section installation requirements, section 12, standby generators shall be installed. It currently, in its current version, it says a licensed electrician or other licensed professional. We had discussed changing that to installed by licensed professionals with the S in parentheses, just all encompassing, so we don't have to list different professionals, because plumbers would be required to install gas line, for example. So that's just one point of clarification I thought was an excellent one. So we'll make those changes, and I believe that would be a de minimis change that wouldn't require reintroduction, but we'll verify with you.
It wouldn't require reintroduction, but it should be something that would place on your consistency review saying, suggest that you change to licensed professionals plural.
Sure.
So if that's acceptable, then we need a motion to approve this as consistent with that revision. I have a second.
I make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
And a roll call.
Mr. Hawley.
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty.
Yes.
Ms. DePasco.
Yes.
Dr. Zuzola.
Yes.
Mr. Curtis.
Yes.
Mr. Neff.
Yes.
Ms. Walters.
Yes.
Mr. Bearmore.
Yes.
And Mr. Hirala.
Yes.
And that concludes the agenda for the workshop meeting. We need a motion and a second to adjourn.
I make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. So we need a call to order for the regular meeting. The regular meeting is called to order at this time at 7:07 p.m. And we need a roll call.
Mr. Kopinski? Mr. Hawley.
Here.
Mr. Dougherty.
Here.
Mr. McGoldrick. Ms. DePasco.
Here.
Dr. Zuzula.
Here.
Mr. Josko. Ms. Majewski. Mr. Curtis.
Here.
Mr. Neff.
Here.
Ms. Walter.
Yes.
Here.
Ms. Fairmore.
Here.
And Mr. Hirala.
Here.
And next is a review of approval for attorney vouchers for July 2025. Need a motion, second.
I make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Ms. DePasco?
Yes.
Dr. Zuzula?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Ms. Walter?
Yes.
Mr. Bearmore?
Yes.
And Mr. Hirala?
Yes.
And the next item is the memorialization of the resolution for the Schützenhofer application at 62 East Lincoln Avenue, Block 79, Lot 1. We're looking for a motion to approve the, or I should say to memorialize the resolution, and a second, followed by a vote.
I make the motion to approve.
I'll second.
Ms. DePasco?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Mr. Knapp?
Yes.
Ms. Walter?
Yes.
And before we go to the next items, there are three matters, 5, 6, and 7 on the agenda that are being carried this evening at the request of the applicants. The first is PB 24-13, Pittenger, 46 2nd Avenue. We've received communication that they're still in the process of revising plans. If you recall, at the last meeting, there were citizens who were objecting. They were trying to resolve their differences, and I'm advised that they are revising their plans. So they are going to be carried to the October 2, 2025 meeting without further notice. Also, because that application has been on the board's agenda for so long, I'm recommending that the board advise the attorney for the applicant that it has been carried to that date, but that we're expecting them to move forward and finalize on that date, or the board may dismiss them for lack of prosecution, because it's been sitting here for almost a year. So if that's acceptable to the board, I will then announce to the public that if you're here in connection with that application, it is being postponed until October 2, 2025 at 7 o'clock p.m. in this same room. There will be no further notice. You're going to rely on the notice that's already been provided, and this is the only notice that you'll receive. If you're interested in the application, you need to be here that date and time. The next item on the agenda is the continuation hearing for Winterling Moody. That's PB 24-1299 Center Avenue, Block 134, Lot 11. That applicant has also requested that the matter be carried. They've requested it to be carried to the October 2, 2025 meeting. That application also has been pending before the board for many months, with any number of adjournments. So I'm recommending to the board that we concede to their request for adjournment, but that they be advised as well that if they're not ready to conclude the application at that time, the board may consider a dismissal of the application for failing to proceed. So for anyone in the public who has an interest in that application, it is being carried to October 2, 2025, 7 p.m. in the same room. This is the only notification you will receive. The next item on the agenda, number 7, is application PB24-14, Paris. It's 22 Prospect Circle, Block 74, Lots 2 and 3. It's a minor subdivision. And that matter, it was on as a new application for this evening. I've reviewed the service in connection with that application. The service is in order. The board does have jurisdiction to proceed on the application. However, we have received a request from their counsel as well that they are not able to proceed this evening. They are requesting that the matter be carried to November 6, 2025. And once again, this is an application that has been, although this is a first hearing for the application, it has been postponed a number of occasions without notice being provided. And again, I'm recommending that the board advise if they're not ready to proceed at the November meeting, they're getting a two-month adjournment here. If they're not ready to proceed, the board will consider a dismissal for failure to proceed with the application. So if that's acceptable, I can announce to the public that anyone who is interested in that application is being carried to November 6, 2025 at 7 o'clock p.m. in the same room. If you're interested in the application, you need to be back here on that date and time when it will be heard. That being said, we then go to another new application which is to be heard this evening. This is application PB2502, Loud, 86 3rd Avenue. It's block 89, lot 3.02. It's a bulk variance application. I have reviewed service. Service is in order. The board does have jurisdiction to hear the application. And we need to have the applicant representative here. Why don't you please come forward and have a seat at the council table over here. I can also indicate to the board that I've reviewed the exhibits received thus far in connection with the application. They include zoning review of your zoning officer, Michelle Clark. That's dated September 24, 2024. That's A1. Exhibit A2 is the application of Edward and Gina Loud. That's dated January 16, 2025. Exhibit A3 is a survey prepared by Morgan Engineering and Survey. That's dated April 17, 2018. Exhibit A4 is a survey with hand-drawn notes on it. Exhibit A5 is a hand-drawn sketch of proposed improvements. Exhibit A6 are two photographs of the existing home. And Exhibit A7 is review number 1 from CME Associates. That's dated March 17, 2025. Those are the exhibits that I'm aware of that the board has received thus far in connection with the application. And I'm making an assumption that you are the applicants.
Gina,
that's correct. Yes.
And so before we start, I would ask, I'm assuming that both of you may be giving testimony, so would you each raise your right hand and be sworn? You each either swear or affirm that any testimony you give in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Thank you.
And ladies, first name and address.
Gina Chiappi Loud, 86 3rd Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey.
Edward Loud, 86 3rd Avenue, Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey.
And who would like to kick off and tell the board about your application, what it is you're trying to accomplish, and why you think the board should grant you various approval?
Okay, well, Madam Chair and members of the board, professional staff, good evening. I'm Ted Lau, this is Gina. And we're seeking a bulk variance, I guess a retroactive bulk variance for a raised porch and accompanying staircase that we constructed in front of our home. at the corner of Third Avenue and East Lincoln. We think that this is, you know, an improvement to the property. Aesthetically, we've gotten nothing but positive feedback from our neighbors and people just walking by, which we think is... So from the standpoint of aesthetics, we think it's an improvement. Also, from the standpoint of safety, the previous staircase was steep and narrow, and when we removed it to construct the current one, we found that it was actually structurally unsound.
Is that something you submitted previously? The board...
I can't show you them.
The board can't look at screens because of the evidence. We can't.
Okay.
If you had a photograph that you could pass around, we could mark. You know, that would be something that the board is not going to pass your screen around. You have submitted photographs.
Yeah, I just didn't. Submit the photo where it shows how the porch is crumbling, and it was only kind of attached by it like a hairnail. And then when they deconstructed it, it was a deep hole that went from the concrete slabs straight down. So anyhow, so we had this overwhelming concern that the porch was deteriorating, which is why we wanted to take the steps to do the reconstruction. And before, the stairs were extremely steep getting into the house, and they were very narrow, and it was hard for my elderly parents, my father, when he was like my mother, now, to get up and down the stairs, let alone us. And so it is beautiful, and I love having a front porch because it connects us to the community so much. But we were really concerned about the safety of those stairs. And then the rest was being part of the community, and yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can go back.
Well, yeah. So it seems that I guess the issue is a setback, which is basically about 2 feet or maybe 2 feet and a few inches with two extra steps, because in making the stairway less steep, you know, the distance from one step to the next was a little smaller. The steps themselves were a bit deeper or wider. So it brings you out 2 steps of about 13 inches each, brings you that much closer to the sidewalk than the previous structure. I should say we also did add a nice stone walkway that is, you know, harmonious with the architecturally with the porch. So it kind of connects the sidewalk to the stairway to the front of the house. What else can I tell you?
So the other thing is that we asked our contractor to come down and talk to you guys about whether or not I needed to get a variance. And he said, I've been doing work in this town forever. You don't need a variance for this work. And then we got a citation one day or a notice one day. So I sent him down and he said, it's all about permeability. But I explained to them how you took out your asphalt driveway and you put in a permeable surface, and that you didn't have an issue of permeability. Mm-hmm. And so we were sort of misled by that, and that's what leads us here. I mean, we take responsibility for that. I probably should have come here and talked to everybody about it first. I just didn't think, because it wasn't a permanent structure, whatever. I was wrong. Should have pursued it. I feel stupid about it.
Well, it was a licensed contractor who had advised us that we were okay. Since then, we've complied with all of the requirements. We've had the work reviewed by engineers and consultants. We provided the required notice to our neighbors about the hearing. I should also mention that regarding permeability, the structure itself, the porch, is
stone.
Stone, and so it is permeable or pervious. And so if you add that as well as the driveway in the back of, you know, a permeable surface, and the sort of footprint, if you will, of permeability has actually been improved. So, you know, we've taken steps to improve that.
Doug, do you have any questions?
Yes. Can I ask who the contractor was?
Phil Smith.
Yes, site specific is the name of the company.
And the gentleman's name is Phil Smith, he's from Highlands. And we got a recommendation from somebody that lived in Atlantic Highlands who, he did a beautiful job on their property.
Yeah, you'll see their sign in front of houses in town. They seem to do a fair amount of work in town.
So, have you had a chance to review the March 17th, 2025 CME technical review?
Mm-hmm.
Great. You'll note that the front yard setback for the principal structure in your zone is 20 feet, is required. In the previous condition, based on the Morgan Engineering Survey, the property had 22.2 feet of front yard existing. So it was compliant in the pre-construction condition. So adding the stairs and the full width patio out to your dimension 10.7 foot setback, that all that area, it violates the front yard setback. So front yard setback, again, 20 feet required. It was 22.2 feet. And your plans submitted indicate it now has been reduced down to 10.7 feet. Can you give some information about how that 10.7 foot dimension was reached? Like it doesn't appear to be to scale. Like how did you come up with 10.7?
I did. This is the sketch that he gave us that he said he took down here and talked to everybody about. It's not very sufficient. You can go to the next one. That's what he gave us, and that's what he said he brought down to City Hall. And I didn't pay attention, and quite honestly, I kept pushing him for more exact measurements so I could see, you know, what the landing was going to be look like. And at the, you know, when I got to it, he gave me a landing that you could barely step out without feeling like you were going to fall off or lose your, you couldn't really guess on it and things like that, which made him add those two extra stairs to the bottom. And then going long ways, I just went with my aesthetic and said, well, let's just take it out to where all the brick is, because it'll look funny if we don't. It just kind of look like it's a porch in the middle of nowhere land. And also, I had a hard time. We've converted the property to a native plant habitat, and we're part of the garden tour and everything coming up next weekend on the 13th. Anyhow, we're really committed to that. And so we planted like 120 native plants on the property, and I wasn't getting a lot of good gardening space in the front for my natives. So just because of the casting from the porch. So I thought, well, this is the best use for that. And that's how I thought about it, not looking at the rules. But I should have looked at the rules. I didn't. I'm wrong. But that's the true story. Is I went
Jess,
with my...
Jess, can you just scroll up to sheet three?
Interrupt for a second. I just marked this exhibit that's being passed around, exhibit A8. It's a hand-drawn sketch of the subject's property, as described by the applicant.
Yeah, so page 3 of 10, yeah, that's it. In your application documents, there's a 10 foot 7 inch dimension, and that's the relief that you're here tonight asking the board to grant from the front lot line to your first step on it. Right. I will note that it's not just a stair. That full width patio violates the front yard setback as well.
And I thought that it was grandfathered in that distance because that's what we had before with where the stairs ended, more or less.
Right, but it's
wider.
There's significantly more footprint being violated in that yard.
I understand that when he went to talk to City Hall, he came back and I can tell you his text messages, but I can't, they're on the computer, or on my phone. But in any case, where he said, I went and talked to them and you don't have an issue. And they were very happy about the way you did your permanent renewal driveway and they thought that was good stewardship. So I don't have an explanation to say that he didn't represent what I needed to be in compliance with the rules. And I didn't independently look it up. I trusted him. Probably I wanted to trust him because it was looking so beautiful.
For the record, if that's an additional variance, the application is being amended to include that. If the board chooses to approve the application.
You mentioned you had different professionals, engineers look at the improvements post-construction. It's the building code does not really fall under the purview of this board. We're here primarily to enforce Chapter 150, our land use regulations, but can you talk a little bit about handrails, edge protection?
Well, I want to add all of that, but I thought maybe I should just wait for the hearing and see what kind of other remediations I might have to do. I'm concerned about taking it apart. I don't want to...
So what I'm hearing is if the board approves the app, you would...
Absolutely.
Comply with all building
code requirements. I mean, maybe this plus, I don't want to fall off of it. I stay away from the edges. He puts a bike helmet on me when I do anything around the house.
That's all I have at the moment. Thank you.
Do you mind going a little bit more in depth about your pervious pavement?
Yeah, it's super. It's a, so we took out all the asphalt, including that big planter that you see in here. The paver planter.
Right. So for my edification, the first picture is what's there, right? And then the second one is what it looks like.
Oh, this is in the back where the driveway
is. Okay.
You don't have a picture of that. I have it on my computer, like it. But it's a little past.
I know where you live. My kids go to school there.
Oh, okay.
We stand in your yard during Halloween parades. So I'm well versed in your home. We do appreciate you letting us stand in your lawn.
No, so you see what that, they're little plastic polymer piles and there's rock underneath.
Okay.
It. And so we didn't want the asphalt, we wanted drainage.
I think it's great. I just wanted to get a little bit more description. And so just so I'm aware, this is 9 feet that we're talking about, right, for the variance? It's 6% of the impervious pavement and then 9 feet for the variance that they're requesting.
Seeing the difference between...
I'm not seeing anything that's requiring a variance from previous coverage.
Well, the per... it was... I'm just trying... I'm just... I'm going to make sure I am understanding. But the... It was required 50%. Proposed is 41%.
Correct. So they're
right.
Under... What is permitted is 50.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was looking at existing as required. I'm sorry. Okay, so the only thing we're talking about is 9 feet.
You're talking only about the front side.
Okay.
Which is being requested at 10 feet, 7 inches. Yep.
So right, I think that's what I wanted to ask about the pervious paving, how that, you know, counters some of the additional coverage.
Yeah, so the site complies in the current condition with building coverage and impervious coverage.
Okay.
It's approaching max impervious coverage permitted at 41%, where
yeah.
50 is permitted, but
yeah.
No relief is specifically needed for the work that's been done.
So the 9 feet is mostly just for standoff?
Could you clarify that?
For standoff, but like standoff from this. From the street, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And if you, I mean, I'd be happy to landscape it to make it not, you know, if I need to make that barrier or something with natives.
Was there a professional survey done after the work was done?
No, and I asked if I needed one, and I was told it doesn't appear that you need to have a new survey, but I did talk to a survey as I was getting ready to say, should I get a new one? And he said, we'll check with the city, and then I will, and then I didn't get a response back until last week.
It might make sense for you, just in case if you want to do more work.
No, I was at work.
It's eleven and a half or eight or six.
There's a little bit of a new art out that'll help me. That was a recommendation in the CME report, 6F, recommending providing a clear site plan showing the basically NASBILs.
Yes, so you know what type of area is for future, that's all.
But I didn't know I needed it for today, but yeah, I think it makes sense to have a new one done, especially with all the changes. There's no more jacuzzi. We put in a little water fountain. It's like our wedding water fountain.
How long is the addition or whatever? How long has it been in place?
We finished it in last September.
So it's about a year.
But the other work, like we changed the front of the house. We had it changed, right. the bay window taken out that was there originally. We had new shingles and siding, new windows.
If I could just continue. There's no roof over the porch currently, correct?
Not going to be.
Okay, because what's before the board for consideration is purely the raised patio and stairs. There was some indication that handrails, guardrails would go up if the board is inclined to approve the application as it is tonight. Can you give the board and the public some insight as to what the
what the
railing would look like? How it would be open and not solid?
I'm going to do probably a brown kind of metal, very durable, and the front stair right through the middle, so from the bottom up until the top stair. Okay. And then I'm going to probably do maybe glass with around it, the kind of glass with the posts, or we might do something that is a metal that has, I don't like those wire ones, but I don't want it to look like, I don't want the ones straight up and down because I feel like I'm in prison every time I see those. Yeah. So something that's very pretty.
And open, not
open.
Closed.
Right. Unless you think we should have more clothes for privacy or something, I could do that.
It's your application. I want you to ask the board for what you're proposing to do, because something else is going to appear within the setback itself, and it's already elevated. So like a solid barrier would cause some additional visual impact.
I want them
to be aware of what you're proposing to do, and specifically that you're not going to put a roof over it or enclose it. You're not going to heat it.
Transparent and no.
No.
Is it electric built in?
No. No. And even I had to give up my little hose socket in the front because I couldn't, and I spent a lot more money to get the plumber to move it up and stuff. And so, anyhow. I think that because one of our reasons for doing this was to be more part of the community and see people in the back, before we were always in the back, which is beautiful too, but to connect with our neighbors. And so if I put something that's too much of a barrier, who am I going to say hi to and tell about my pumpkin patch? Which is a volunteer.
Exhibit A6 was two photographs, and the bottom photo on the page that I have shows a railing at the top.
It was kind of falling apart. There was a lot of those little poles were falling out.
You're referring to the
old previous porch?
The previous
stairway. I'm not sure what maybe the old porch. It was
that's the old one.
In one of the photos that you provided.
Yeah, so that's.
And then they
the bottom. The bottom picture is what we replaced. That's before, and then
yeah.
The top one is after.
Is the fence you're proposing going to be similar in nature to that?
No, I think it's going to be not wood and a durable metal in a brown tone to match the house. And
then with transparent, glass or plexiglass.
Maybe not on the stair railing, but around the rest of it. And the height of the porch is 2 feet 9 inches. Basically all around, there's one part close to the house on the right side, which is 2 feet 5 inches. So definitely it warrants a thing, and then the insurance guy showed up at her house and said, you guys need to put a railing here if you want to continue your insurance. So I've got that pressure too.
So the fence is not going to be a solid fence?
I would prefer it to be a pretty glass, you know, the transparent glass with minimal, you know, things.
And it would be 4 feet or less in height?
I will go to exactly where the code wants me to go for it.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to come back and show you that if I need to do that to amend it as well.
4 questions. Are there any questions or comments from the public?
I just have one question. On the glass panel, does that, and that does more for Doug, does that meet the mid-rail requirement? So you have 42 inches plus or minus 3.
Doug, you either swear or affirm that any testimony you're about to give the truth, all truth, nothing but the truth.
I'm going to defer to the building department on that, okay. Because it's building code.
Okay.
And yes, I do.
Doug Rohmeyer.
I think the idea is before the answer, but I mean, I'm just, my first time.
You actually have those glass ones on your porch?
No.
No, it's just from a code standpoint.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, obviously we would comply with the code, so whatever the code dictates.
And we'll stop by the code and figure out what that is, and then when we shop for it, we'll make sure. And I might even bring it to City Hall and ask a question of you to make sure it's triple.
I just have one more question about the code and any impacts it may have on the stair in particular. So I know we're not asking, and don't have, it's not germane to us, the particulars of what the code requires, but if the code were to require, say, a larger landing between the two sets of stairs, or the rise and run was not sufficient to meet code and that therefore impacts that stair, makes it go further into the setback or less, or is an approval that we may make today kind of building in any accommodation for minor adjustments?
Condition will be that it has to be code compliant.
Even if it means less of the setback, more variance is required, we don't have to see that again, I guess is the point.
That's up to the board if you want to give that relaxation, that flexibility.
Can I ask a question?
That's going to come into effect once the survey gets done, because then you'll know how big the landing is and how far it is. So then it's kind of hard to approve anything that we don't know any dimensions, because it's written on it's handwritten, so we don't really know.
So, I'm sorry, I just need to understand the question. Is your question
what they're saying is that you have to build this in accordance with the building codes. If for some reason a building code requires you to go beyond what you've already done, that would increase the amount, the degree of the variance isn't any good.
So the building code for the railing?
No.
So I have to go through another step and go back to the building code people and have them look at it?
Do you have a CO for this? Because it is...
Well, they're going to have to apply for the constructive building permits, and they're going to have to get them approved.
You won't know until, once you apply for the building permit, then everybody will know what has to be done. That we can't really, we don't know.
Okay, so I see. So you get the variance, if you get the variance, then you need to get a building code. So we're doing everything backwards.
Kind of.
All right.
I blame it on your contract.
I do too. I don't want to have to see him again to blame him.
It's just, the residents should always do their due diligence, but the contractor should know better.
That's what
it's really on the homeowner to do there. Which it seems like you understand that.
I do.
But it's, the contractor should steer you a little bit in a better direction. So.
Or maybe you just needed to have a job.
So the bottom line is, if the board chooses to approve what you requested this evening, and you go to the construction office, it would be conditional approval for you to use the code compliant improvements. And if they say, this is all fine, you're code compliant, you're done. If they say, no, in order to comply with the code, you have to make these changes, which are going to increase the degree of variance relief will have to come back here to request an amendment to your approval.
Okay, understood.
We don't want to leave that until you can go through that process.
Okay.
Anything further from the board or the public? Yes, Mr. Fisher.
Mark Fisher, 913rd Avenue. Thank you, Chairwoman Duzela, Dr. Duzela.
Mr. Fisher, is it going to be a statement or?
It's a question.
Question.
I'll hold back on this. Positive and negative criteria, isn't that part of the definition of how it complies with both the positive and the negative criteria prior to a vote? Yes.
Yes, I believe so. I'll defer to our attorney.
Thank you.
There are three parts of a request for variance relief. The positive criteria, which is, are there justifications for granting the variance relief, which I think you've already given a number of them, the topography of the property, the steepness, the prior steps being deficient, et cetera, et cetera. That's one. The other two prongs are what they call the negative criteria. And the first prong is, if the board grants a variance relief, will it have some substantial detriment to the public good? So basically, what Mr. Fisher is saying is, do you have anything to say about whether or not what you're proposing and what you've done is consistent with the surrounding neighborhood, or is it going to have an adverse impact upon the surrounding neighborhood? And the second prong is whether the grant of the variance will result in any substantial impairment of the zone plan. So I guess the question there is, if the variance is granted, is this inconsistent with the other development along the street? Are there other similar homes with similar setbacks, with walkways, patios, whatever? So I think Mr. Fisher is suggesting that maybe you want to address those.
No. Well, I think that we're out of compliance, and so that is an impairment to the zoning, but I don't believe that it's a substantial one. And I think it could be easily mitigated if neighbors and people felt like I needed to have landscaping or something like that to make it more appealing or to meet any of the policy that is behind that zoning requirement. I do say that we get a lot of people come by and they really enjoy looking at it and think it's very pretty what we did. So I don't know if that addresses the question.
Of consistency, I guess, I suppose a lot of other properties were grandfathered in, but there's certainly a lot of porches and steps that, you know, come much closer to the sidewalk.
Yeah, ours. And we see it on our
walk.
So
in essence, we're not really inconsistent, I don't think, with our surrounding neighbors.
But but certainly if neighbors felt like we needed to do more, they wanted a barrier to us and our property, we would make this amendment. Does that answer both those negatives?
You've given a response.
Yes.
So it's up to the board to deliberate at this point on the request for variance relief.
So I'll start. I asked the question how long it's been in place, because it's been in place for a year. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that none of your neighbors are here to oppose your project. And I think that's very telling. And so I think you'd be commended that you're coming to rectify this situation. I mean, I think we're all subject to, we trust expertise. We trust the professionals that we hire. And I probably, or may have done the same thing. And so I think you're to be commended that you're here to rectify it. I have no issues.
Yeah, similar thoughts. My concern was the drainage because of the height of the wall in the front, but the permeable discussion was really helpful for me, so thank you for that, in addition to the native plant discussion. And I've seen your house during, and you need a place to watch the children during the Halloween parade, right?
It's a really good vantage point.
We have 5 pumpkins in the front yard waiting for them.
Oh my goodness, it is quite an ordeal. It's coming up soon, so just from my standpoint as well, not having anybody here concerned about that. I've walked past it multiple times. I have not had an issue with it, and again, the permeability would have been,
No wet lawn in the front, anything.
Mostly concerned with getting you affecting your neighbors, but yeah. I mean, the way that you've described it doesn't seem to impact them, and the fact that they're not here is further illustrates that that there's no concern there.
So. Well, we do pay a lot of attention to the landscape, as you know. We're out there every weekend doing something.
There's on that side of town, there's plenty of properties that have slopes to them and stairs that come right off the sidewalk, and there's an elevated portion before the house, so I can't see how this would be like not fitting to a lighting island.
I think porches are a great thing, and I'd like you to comment about it, you know, being a social thing. It is part of the social fabric in this town. And this may look different than the historic houses with their covered porches, but it kind of accomplishes the same thing for those reasons. And as been stated, no neighbors complaining about it. I think it probably does project less than some of the other porches, even on this very block, from what I recall. So I agree with the prior comments. I would suggest that perhaps having some plantings in front of the masonry wall would soften that look a bit, maybe make it fit in a little bit better into the streetscape. And I'd also think about the choice consideration of glass as a railing, even if not what we're supposed to talk about here. In my day job, I see a lot of that. It ends up getting dirty and it's a maintenance issue. So.
Well, we're not with it to that. We wanted to just minimize the structural.
We actually just went to visit friends in Canada that have glass because we were curious about that as well. And she said that it never, maybe it's the way it's made or anything, it never gets that much dirt on it. No, believe me, I don't love cleaning. So and I like getting dirty, but not cleaning. But she seemed to be very happy with it. But I did have that, we both had that same concern. We definitely want something though that is going to not make a barrier, because that's not what we did this. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that we did, I cleared out at the beginning of the spring some lawn. I put down some cardboard and mulch on top of it so I can create more barrier between the house. So just some more natives. And then on the other side, the volunteer pumpkin showed up. But we're planning for more vegetation.
Ready for a motion?
Any comments from the public?
We're open for comments and questions, yes.
Oh, can we get a motion?
I make a motion to approve the plan as is with the consistency caveats that we put into it. We're ready.
Yeah, that include adding the handrails pursuant to building code requirements. That's what the railing will be, it won't be solid. Or translucent, be transparent, height code compliant, not roofed or enclosed, and the applicants to be providing an as-built survey.
Mr. Hawley?
Yes.
Mr. Dougherty?
Yes.
Mr. Pasta?
Yes.
Dr. Zuzula?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Mr. Neff?
Yes.
Ms. Walter?
Yes.
Mr. Barrymore?
Yes.
Mr. Hiroko?
Yes.
I'm so sorry. I don't know why I can't say that.
I think it's, you get Zuzula, but you, I mean, that is, I'm impressed. I mean.
It's Harala.
Thank you. You are approved. The board will adopt a memorialization resolution at its next meeting in October. That's when you'll be able to actually, you can start working on things now, but you won't have formal approval to get permits or anything until that is adopted.
I am out of town, out of country for business at the October meeting date.
You don't need to be here.
It's okay. You can be here? Okay. All right. Well, we thank you for hearing us out and for everything. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Madam Chair, the next item on the agenda is application PB25-01, Calamaris Almeida. It's 39 Hooper Avenue, Block 55, Lot 5. It's variance application. I have reviewed service in connection with the application. The service is in order. The board does have jurisdiction to hear the application. And I'm aware of the following exhibits that the board has received thus far in connection with the application. They include Exhibit A1, the application for development permit of Lee Calamaris and Leslie Almeida. That's dated December 17, 2024. Exhibit A2 is a denial from the zoning officer Michelle Clark, dated December 24, 2024. Exhibit A3 is a superficial geology map prepared by Scott P. Stanford. That's a year date of 2000. Exhibit A4 has a boundary and topographic survey prepared by Morgan Engineering. That's dated December 4, 2023. Exhibit A5 is a steel slope plan prepared by R.C. Burdick, professional engineer and planner. That's dated April 6, 2025. Exhibit A6 are architectural site plan with elevation and floor plans prepared by some architects. That's dated May 5, 2025. Exhibit A7 is a soil borne report and foundation analysis prepared by R.C. Burdick, engineer and planner. That's dated March 27, 2025. Exhibit A8 is an evaluation prepared by R.C. Burdick, engineer and planner. That's dated February 3, 2025. Exhibit A9 is review number 1 of CME Associates. That's dated June 27, 2025. Exhibit A10 is an aerial photograph of the subject property. And Exhibit A11 is a series of 7 photographs of the subject property and the Hooper Avenue streetscape. Those are the exhibits that I'm aware of thus far in connection with the application. And Mr. Anderson is here on behalf of the applicant.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Mr. Seibel is stepping down for this application.
The record will reflect that Mr. Dougherty has stepped out from the dais.
Good evening, Chairman Zuzlock, members of the board, professionals, Mr. Stott, John Anderson of the law firm of Foss, San Filippo, and Milne, on behalf of the applicant Lee Calamaris and Leslie Almeida, with regard to 39 Hooper. As Mr. Seibel previously said, this is an existing single-family home. It's one story, and it has a cellar below. It's located in a steep slope zone on a steeply sloped lot. If you were to walk out the rear door, there's an attached deck. Beyond that deck, we're basically subject to some 30% slopes that encircle the rear and the side of the home. I believe that's what drives some of the existing conditions on the site today, namely the 8.2-foot front setback that exists to the home. The home, I think, is set closer to the street because it couldn't be set further without encroaching into those steep slopes. Also, the building coverage, we're slightly over at 15.6% presently, where 15% is allowed. I would posit that that has to do with the existing decks attached to the rear of the home, which become building coverage. We don't have much usable space that you could use for any kind of yard or backyard, so the decks are kind of critical and essential. The only other variance is also an existing condition having to do with lot circle diameter. So of those conditions, two are remaining completely unchanged, namely the building coverage and the lot circle diameter. One is proposed to be exacerbated. We're not getting any closer to the road, but we want to go vertical with a partial second story and an attic that's accessible by way of a pull down. These conditions, as you'll hear this evening, are fairly typical of the neighborhood because we're not the only home situated on a slope. So many of the homes on Hooper, on both sides, but particularly our side, where the downhill slope is behind us, they're set up a little closer to the road. And I should tell you, 8.2 feet is really to the corner of the home. The home is not really square, as you'll see from some photos and some mapping. It's set a little bit on a slant or diagonal to the road. The road also has a curvature. So when we say the 8.2, it's to the closest element of the building. but not to the full front of the home. You'll also hear that we're a little bit unique in that our first floor is set largely below the line of the sidewalk. We'll give you some numbers and some quantification. It's shown on the plans, but we'll make it a little bit more obvious for you exactly where the line of the street is, because it meanders sort of right through a good portion of the home, and much of the first floor is actually effectively below the line of the street. I would argue, and our planner will tell you in his opinion, that would mitigate the existing and proposed front setback of 8.2 feet. We have two witnesses with us this evening. We have our geotechnical engineer from R.C. Burdick. I'll put him on first. I'll endeavor to be very brief with him because we're not planning to do any type of disturbance of any nature. So he'll just tell you what he found in terms of the absence of any slumping on the lot, the absence of any slump blocks in the immediate area, and the ability of the existing foundation and soils to carry the weight of the proposed second floor above. We'll be brief. And then we have one other witness who's both an architect and a professional planner. He'll present to you the existing conditions, the proposed conditions, and give you his planning rationale for why it is we believe we're entitled to the variance relief request this evening. Mr. Stibe, thanks so much for marking those exhibits. I believe that will help to move things along more rapidly. Could we have Mr. Iyab sworn as a geotechnical?
Sir, raise your right hand and be sworn. Do you swear affirm that any testimony given in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
And state your name and address for the record.
Monsieur Iyab, 566 Pennsylvania Avenue, Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Mr. Iyab, would you review your credentials as a geotechnical engineer?
So I graduated from the first in 2011 and with a bachelor's degree, then in 2012 I got my master's in a geotech from NGIT, and since then I've been working as a civil engineer, but mainly my focus is geotechnical engineer. Anything that has to do with foundation, slope, soil, anything has to do with foundational soil, that's where my specialty is. Then in 2016, that's when I obtained my professional engineering license. So I have more than about 14 years experience as a design engineer. Most of my experience is I started as a field engineer doing a soil inspection, when they were drilling, take the soil out, classify it, that's my first thing. Then I also did some bridge inspection. Then I moved on to design, where I design spread footing for bridges, pile design, drill shaft design for bridges. I did some parkway, there was a widening project. I did some slope stability analysis for some of the embankments that they did there. Then I moved on into more design. Then after that, I moved more into work that has to do with the railroad tracks. So I did some foundation design, like micropile, deep foundation for substation. I did a lot of pile design for bar structures. So most of my experiences are related to geotech and foundation.
Mr. Yab, are you the primary geotechnical engineer with R.C. Burdick?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, though you haven't testified before this board, I personally have used R.C. Burdick as a witness in the steep slope zone on Hooper Avenue for the Gagnon application, if you all remember that. That's right across the street. You have familiarity with the Gagnon's application right across the street on Hooper?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And so the board has accepted R.C. Burdick's expertise before in the geotechnical field to render this type of testimony. Will the board accept the witness's credentials as a geotechnical engineer?
Yes. The objections? None.
Okay, great. Mr. Iyab, are you familiar with the property?
Yes.
Are you familiar with the planned improvements?
Yes.
The local ordinances?
Yes.
Relevant USGS mapping and the paper entitled Landslide Potential and Atlantic?
Yes.
You prepared the plans and reports that were marked into evidence previously by Mr. Stibe this evening as exhibits A, 5, 7, and 8, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Can you confirm that the property is not located in or near a known or potential slump block?
So based on the review of the existing information that we have, USGS map, the nearest known slump block, the house is half a mile away from the nearest known slump block, and it's also about 700 feet away from a potential slump block. So it's not within existing or any potential slump block.
Did you have the opportunity to make some first-hand observations of the subject property?
Yes, I inspected the property twice on January 24, 2025, and then again I went out to look at the foundation or the foundation wall on February 1st, 2025.
And did you specifically make visual observations for any type of slumping or sloughing on the property?
We did not see any potential for sloughing or
slumping. Good. And I previously made a proffer that we're not proposing any new disturbance based upon your review of the plans. Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. Have your review of the on-site conditions and the relevant mapping led you to be able to conclude that the site will remain stable both during construction and after?
Yes, we did. We also went out to do the soil boring, and we measured the existing footing and make sure that the additional second floor is not going to increase the pressure on the soil, and the tearing capacity on the soil is sufficient.
Okay. I have no further questions of this particular witness, but I would invite the board, their professional staff, to come in here.
Okay, let you take the lead.
Thank you. With regards to the exhibit entitled I guess it was in our packet as a slope report, just want to get some clarification on the proposed construction and recommendation section. So this is the final page of your report.
Yes.
I see the middle paragraph. We recommend a professional engineer perform a foundation analysis to confirm the existing footings will support the weight of the proposed second story.
Yes.
And then that section goes on to say that said based on the current plans, and you conclude that there will be no detrimental impact. So I just want a little clarification that this in this report you are certifying the foundation, or are you recommending an additional foundation analysis?
No. So what we did is, typically when we have an additional story, we go out and we measure the existing footing. We have a dimension of the footing. We use that. If not, we go out and we excavate around the footing and measure it. And when we measure it and we calculated the additional load, this is the addition, and we so we calculated the total load, and we know the bearing capacity of the soil. And we calculate based on the size of the footing, the existing footing has a there's no need for addition.
Okay, so for the board
timeline, may be able to flush out, Mr. Romeyer, because I think A7, which was about a month later in time, may have been the report that was recommended. So then they were hired to go back out to do that further work. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Because if the project goes to construction and a determination is made later, the foundation is insufficient, and we start, you need disturbance and redesign, that's very different from what's being proposed to the board today, right? Today it's at a level, and I just want to make sure that you're certifying that the foundation is okay as is to support the proposed work.
Yes.
And that's concluded in your March 7, 2025 soil boring and foundation analysis. A7.
Yes. Yes.
We have a report verifying the soil board. Yeah, we didn't want to leave that open ended. We had them back out the site.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you.
Any other questions? Any questions from members of the public of this witness? There are none. Next witness.
Thank you, Mr. Young. And the witness will remain sworn, and if there's any other questions that come up, we can certainly speak to those.
You can leave them, please.
since the geotech's still sworn, can I still ask a question?
Sure.
Just real quick, since, well, he's getting up. Did you check the status of Auditorium Road? Did you do like an analysis of what that road looked like that it abuts against?
What do you mean by analysis?
Did you determine the current state of that road and then the potential impacts of any drainage changes that would impact that road? Maybe none?
Okay, so I think...
Because I think that road is a little, yeah, it's not in a good state.
So we did not do analysis of the road, but what we consider was that in our report we included that because of the steepness of the slope, additional drainage or any water flowing to the slope is not recommended, because that's going to make the slope, if the water increases, then there's a chance of having the slope is higher. So then maybe Michael explained about whatever downspouts that they have, they're going to connect to an existing drainage.
Oh, okay.
So there's no water flowing into the slope.
Okay. So just curious if there was like an initial assessment of the abutting structure or road, so that you could ascertain whether the drainage was appropriate as it's being placed. So if there is damage that you see progressively, that it could be adjusted for the drainage.
Okay, we didn't, when I was out there, I didn't see anything.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to note it down on my pad. It's a good question. And as we go through the testimony with Mr. Simpson, we'll try to make sure we address to the best of our ability existing conditions and just give the relevant evidence to show that when we go up but not out at all, that we think we're not really augmenting any existing drainage flows.
Okay.
But we'll address it, certainly.
Thank you.
Mr. Simpson, good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you.
I'm going to swear or affirm that any testimony given in connection with this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth.
I do.
And name and address.
Michael M. Simpson, architect and planner, located currently at 25 Devon Court, Tinton Falls, New Jersey.
Mr. Simpson, you have testified in those capacities before this board previously and been accepted, have you not?
I have.
Thank you, Mr. Simpson. As I ask of all my witnesses, are you familiar with the property?
I am.
The ordinance and the master plan?
Yes, I am.
Did you prepare the plans marked into evidence this evening as A6?
I did.
All right. Why don't you start by describing the existing home and existing conditions on the site?
Sure, and it might be helpful actually to go to a different sheet in the just for the board's reference. I can flip to it, and you have the photographs as evidence, I believe, the 7 photographs.
Yes.
It's easiest probably to look at some of those to get the existing house. It's essentially a ranch house. It happens to have a cellar that extends below that ranch, and the house is a little unusual because it actually sits below the grade of the adjacent street. Significant portions of the house, if you were to look at our elevation drawing, which is I think C200 would be the one we want to look at.
That would be part of A6 as marked in the city.
There's an important line at the bottom drawing on this, which is this dashed line that cuts right through the drawing. That is the actual grade of the street as defined by the survey that we have. So as you can see, the house sits largely below the street, and since that is the sort of defining line of the height for the building, as well as various different things having to do with cellar, that's a really critical line. You can note that even the one-story section of that first floor currently is bifurcated essentially by the street. So the house sits meaningfully below the street level as you face it. Looking further at the adjacent properties, again coming back to those photographs, you'll see that the neighborhood is largely early 20th century, late 19th century homes that are 2 to 3 stories tall on both sides of Hooper Avenue. And this largely sits below those elevations everywhere, all the way around. As already noted by both Mr. Eob as well as Mr. Anderson,
The house was built probably someplace in the '70s. In order to build it, you had to build pretty close to the street. Just from construction procedures, you would not have been able to really build down the hill. So it was placed in someplace about 50 years ago, pretty close to the front setback. I don't know what the ordinance called for as far as setbacks back at the time this place was built, but it's not unusual for the neighborhood. As already noted, the Gagnon property across the street also has encroached upon setback requirements, as do most of the properties along Hooper Avenue. The slope conditions are such that you really need to sort of build near the street in order to avoid the slope issues.
Okay. Now, would you walk the board through the proposed improvements to the site?
Sure. The proposal is quite simply to take and add a second story above the largest mass of the house. Again, going back to the site plan of the house, there is, at the southern end of the house, is a one-story section. That's the one that I noted was sort of bifurcated by the road, elevationally speaking. And then the other section, which is the main bulk of the house. Currently, that bulk of the house at the first floor level houses two bedrooms, a kitchen, a family room, and a dining room, accessory bathroom storage, things like that. Below that is the cellar, which currently has, I think you'll find out on our C100 plan, that currently has, oops, that's the other elevation sheet. The cellar plan currently has what we're identifying as shop and office spaces, bathrooms, storage areas, and a media room down at that lower level. No changes are proposed to the lower level. There is an expansive deck, as noted before, both at the cellar level as well as the main living level. What we're proposing is that an existing bedroom at the first floor will go away, and that will now become our breakfast area and pantry. At the second floor, which is our sheet C101, we are proposing three bedrooms. One is a master suite, which will be largely at the north end of the second floor, with the daughter's bedroom and a guest bedroom. There will be a quote bedroom den study space remaining on the first floor, but otherwise it's essentially a second floor addition over the existing first floor to create for new bedroom spaces.
Okay. There were a few items in the the CME engineering review marked in as A9 that I wanted to sort of preemptively address, and I think we should probably to the best of our ability address Dr. Zuzulak's question. Let's start with the CME engineering review. And I just wanted you to confirm, if you would, that the lowest level is in fact a cellar as defined under the Atlantic Highlands ordinances. That, of course, is consequential both from a standpoint of usable floor area as well as if it is or is not a story. Mr. Simpson, is that a cellar as that defined term is presented in the ordinance?
Yes, as amended under the 422-2021 ordinance 07-2021, averaging around the four sides of the house, you have a front of 33%, south of 58%, a rear of 100%, and a north of 100%. You basically end up with 72.88% below 72.88%, which is below the 75% as allowed under the ordinance. The ordinance definition says that no more than 75% of the cubic volume of the average level of the adjoining ground. In this case, it's 72.88%. The vertical distance between the average level of the finished grade and the front of the building at the interior ceiling height is literally below that line. So therefore, the average level of ceiling height is below grade, at that level. So it's my understanding that this qualifies as a cellar.
And as such would not be treated as a story or included for usable floor area ratio calculation purposes?
That is correct.
Would you briefly just describe the proposed partial attic?
Certainly, the attic is similar. Habitable attics are defined as that area which would be a height of 7 1/3 feet above the attic floor, and most importantly, has an approved stairway as a means of access and egress. We're not proposing such a thing. It's literally going to be a pull-down stair to the attic. We do illustrate on our plan, C101, the area that would be included in the event that you had a stair, but we're not proposing that. That area is less than the area that would qualify as a habitable area under any other definition of a habitable attic. But again, it's not proposed to be a habitable attic in any way.
Yeah, so could you just confirm that we are within allowable tolerances for height, both in feet and stories, and that we are within allowable tolerances for usable floor area ratio?
That is correct.
To your understanding, we meet the parking requirements both under the local ordinance and RSIS?
Yes. The existing house is effectively operating as a two-bedroom home now, and therefore didn't require much in the way of. But with a proposal for a four-bedroom home, you would be required to have 2.5 spaces under RESA's requirements. In this case, even if you were to count some other room as an additional room, as an additional bedroom, you would still be in a situation, even if you were a five-bedroom home under RESA's standards, you would only be required to have 3 parking spaces. They have ample parking on the garage side, quotes the downstairs cellar side, where the driveway is, ample parking for 3 vehicles at least.
Okay, well, and we'll certainly give Mr. Rohmeyer an opportunity to ask any questions he may have.
Certainly.
I want to try to address Dr. Z's last question with respect to the existing and proposed drainage on the site. What can you tell the board about that?
Sure. As we already know, the house has a roof plane, and we're basically taking that roof plane and raising it up a level. The impervious coverage is not changing, so the same drainage will be there that is there now. There is currently drainage, as noted on my sheet C001, that is indicated there are 2 subsurface drain lines.
Thanks, John.
There are 2 subsurface drain lines that run from opposite corners of the house. At the north side, running to roughly the northeast, out to Auditorium Drive, and then from the southwest corner, there are drainage pipes that run, again, subterranean in both locations, out to Auditorium Drive. We are proposing debris filters to be installed in those to make sure that we don't get those clogging up, but to make sure that they drain amply to Auditorium Drive. The roof coverage is literally the same roof, although a different shape. It's the same area of roof that is being raised.
For the most part, if you simply did nothing and you didn't have that subterranean, based upon the slopes of the site, would it drain to Auditorium anyway?
That's what it would do by gravity.
Does that help at all, Dr. Zuzulak, to answer?
No, I understand the concept of the drainage. I think my and it goes into like just the construction, and so I guess I was just kind of curious of your adjacent, like, did you review anything adjacent to you to see, like, is the existing drainage acceptable, is it working, does it need to be modified, does it need to be improved? So yes, you are basically doing the same thing, but is it working?
We are doing the same thing, but again, the introduction of the debris filters, we feel like that's going to make sure that we don't have clogging issues. Over time, on the property, it has drained successfully at the Auditorium Drive. You do have a slightly weird condition going on with Auditorium Drive. While the map line of Auditorium Drive is here, and that's where the drains go to, mm-hmm. the actual paved area encroaches on the property.
Yeah.
So they're actually dealing with the fact that their property impervious coverage is actually your road.
So we actually have to deal with that, and fortunately, in both cases, the drain lines are not in that area. They are out to the actual line of the MAC Auditorium Drive cul-de-sac.
Yeah, and we can speak about it with Mr. Romeyer as the professional, but my understanding on a site like this is we wouldn't want to do any kind of recharge because that could compromise those slopes. And I don't know that you want to sheet flow it either for the same reason. So the piping, to me at least, as a non-engineering professional, seems like the potentially one of the only available solutions, I suppose.
So it's just reusing the existing?
Yeah, it's reusing the existing. So and there's no history of drainage issues there.
No history of issues up in
there. Yeah, there's no history of...
Because Auditorium Drive does have some issues, not to say it's them.
No, but...
But just to say, you know, just for future...
It's
for,
a weird
for
road.
Them, you know, it would be good for them to have that
so
identified now.
So Hooper sitting above it, you have all that land mass with similar 30%.
I live on Summit, like right above that. Yeah. So, yes.
Yeah, it's pretty pronounced. I mean, when I went up for the Gagnon application for the first time, oh my God.
Yeah, it's really...
It's unique.
It's really intense. Yeah, so I just wanted to make sure that...
Yeah, there's no history. Yeah, there's been no history of those drains having any problems. I think the recollection is that those drains are 6-inch diameter pipe. So they're more than the size required for a roof of this size.
Thank you.
I don't have further questions of the witness in this capacity as an architect. We could certainly sort of take a little opportunity to ask questions of him in that capacity, or we could continue forward with his planning testimony and ask anything at the end. I'll defer to the board how they want to address that.
Doug, what's your preference?
I could go to your specific letter if you'd like to.
Let's ask questions of the architect at this point. Make sure we get them because it might may or may not change your planning testimony.
Understood.
With regards to the CME June 27th report, we spoke, you already heard from you regarding stormwater. Constructability, proximity to the utility pole in that front corner and overhead wires. Have you looked at that and taking...
Yeah, we're going to be somewhat at the mercy of JCP&L, of course. But the intention is to essentially take the rain head, as it were, and go directly up, and it'll come in the same location at the corner of the building. But we're going to be at the mercy of JCP&L on when we can do that and how we can do it. So the intention is not to change its location on the street or the issues as far as constructability, getting materials on and off the site. The intention is to bring the materials to the site for the construction of the second floor through the driveway. Currently, it is possible to park vehicles on that side of Hooper Avenue, and the homeowner can move his own vehicles out to that location and use the staging of the driveway to handle all the construction work.
Thank you. I just want to understand after the construction sequence a little bit. This is proposed to be stick-built, right? It's not like a modular?
No, it's stick-built. Yeah, it's because, for a lot of reasons, actually, it needs to be stick-built.
Demolition work is going to be limited to the proposed second story add-on, or are you going to take
the demolition work? You'll have some, as we saw on the floor plan before. In order to reconfigure the first floor and get rid of the bedrooms and to get rid of the bedroom and reconfigure the kitchen layout. So yes, there'll be some demolition in the northwest corner and reconfiguration of the kitchen. But otherwise, the rest of the floor plan stays the same. We get a new entry closet, which we don't have now, but that's the only demolition work. Obviously, to put a second floor on, you got to remove the second, you got to remove the roof. But the intention is to keep the existing ceiling joists in place with the new framing going on top of the existing framing. So there'll be some protection and some things that'll have to happen in order to accomplish all that at the upper levels.
Thank you. The exhibit shown on the screen now, I guess we'll call it the site plan, there's a call out for replacing the like front porch overhang.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a canopy that exists now at the front porch.
Yes.
And so in the addition, need you to see in the elevation drawing, so we can get to that. It's actually just a simple little gable. What is there now is a little angular roof that sort of comes down over that entryway. We're just proposing that that become an accentuated thing by making it a gable. So it's the same dimension as the existing thing, but it's just an extension in a gable form on that side of the house.
Not getting closer to the front?
No, it's exactly the same dimension, projection-wise, off the face of the house.
And that's a good question, because Mr. Simpson, I made a proffer before that the setback was measured to the extreme left-hand side, level, which is closest to the road. With your understanding that as you move up the hill or towards the right-hand side of the home, that the home becomes further away from the front lot lines?
It does, but the entire front of the house is in the setback, yeah. And there's really nothing to be done about that.
You provided some testimony on existing and proposed bedrooms. I believe you said the proposed bedroom count was 4?
Yes.
There's some other spaces within the proposed home overall that could be considered bedroom in the future, or?
Mr. Calamiris is a contractor, and he uses that space as his office at this point.
Speaking of the cellar?
Yes, the cellar space is being used as an office with occasional work for shop space and things like that in that other accessory space, along with storage. There are bathrooms in the basement, and if the Calamiris's that might have should move away, it's conceivable that somebody could choose to convert those spaces. So it's a legitimate question. But again, from a Reese's point of view and from a parking point of view, there's nothing in Reese's that discusses what to do with a six-bedroom house, for example.
Well, it's they have no five intention. Or greater, it's, three,
it's
three.
Yeah, correct? It's five or greater, it's three. They have three. So we don't see it. Either a violation or a waiver needed for a condition that somebody else might make true, but it's certainly not their intention to run the house in that way. It's not intended as six bedrooms. It's a four-bedroom house with his working spaces in the cellar.
I just want to make sure we're not restricting. Are you restricting the use?
I think it's sort of academic, because whether it's considered to be four bedrooms or six bedrooms, the parking requirement is three, which we meet, and this is not a house that's on septic, it's on sewer, so the bedroom count's kind of academic. We're within usable floor area, correct?
Yes.
I just wanted to be clear that the, like, if the resolution is written up that this is four,
yes,
I don't want there to be a problem down the road that if one of them goes, if it goes to five or six or seven.
I don't know how it would go to seven unless literally you physically change the house again, which would require coming back here for another discussion. Again, it's a hypothetical that isn't being proposed at this point. Their proposal was a four-bedroom house with his working space in the cellar.
Four beds. Thank you.
Ceiling height in the cellar.
It's under the cellar definition. I forgot what that now. I don't have that again in front of me, but it's not an excessive ceiling height.
What happened to the two-car garage? It was under there too. Now it's converted to a workshop and development.
It's been that way. Yeah, it's been that way. So it's not proposing a change to that. It's been that way.
I think the garage section of the ordinance actually speaks to that. I looked at it today because I thought that question might come up, and I believe the garage section does allow a conversion of an existing garage to habitable area as long as it's an attached garage. This wouldn't be the case for a detached, obviously, but for an attached, it allows that conversion as long as you have offset parking in the driveway.
But yeah, the ceiling height is not, it's not an excessive ceiling height. It's not more than 8 feet or anything like that. It fits under the definition of a cellar.
So can you, your site plan depicts two cars parked on site. Can you just confirm that a third car can fit without going over the property?
Sure. We may need to add another exhibit.
I think we were up to exhibit A12, Mr. Stein. Is that correct?
Find that. copies of the exhibit and a description for the board?
Sure, I do. I have a quotes sketch plan we prepared for this meeting, which we're referring to as vehicle diagram. And I have copies for everyone that wants one.
Is that dated as of today's date, Mr.?
Honestly, I forgot to put a date on it.
But there is a date, it is today's date.
Make it 9/4/2025.
So that's your copy, the client's copy.
Copies for everybody else here. So, what I did was I prepared a, I sort of, cleared out some of the notation of other things using the same basic survey and, plot plan. And I indicated, specific kinds of vehicles. So the driveway that is illustrated in this vehicle diagram illustrates a Ford F-150 pickup truck and two Jeep Cherokees. These are fairly substantial vehicles and shows easily that those three fit in that driveway. Anticipating a little bit of discussion about trucks and deliveries and all that kind of stuff. In the event that they were not able to get deliveries down into the driveway, it is illustrated that you could get a delivery truck and even a supplies lift in Hooper Avenue and still have enough room to get another F-150 truck past those vehicles for the limited amount of time in which those vehicles might be on Hooper Avenue. As we've already referred to the project across the street multiple times in this testimony, the Gagnon project, for example, had much more heavy equipment necessary in order to do what was done for that project and had no meaningful complications to traffic flow or anything on the street.
I'll disagree with that.
Really?
I'll disagree, yes.
Okay.
I will disagree with that. They shut down the street multiple times where we had to drive around and there was like...
My apologies. I was unaware of it.
I'm just saying that,
my apologies. I was unaware of it.
There may be issues.
Okay.
That's fine. We all live in these areas, and it's so. I think we just be honest and say there is potential. That
again, I was unaware of those issues.
Multiple times.
And then just to wrap up, one more time: no change in drainage area to each of those roof leader collection systems. Correct.
Correct.
While you're changing the geometry of the roof itself, not by footprint, but by...
you get an angle here instead of an angle there, but the drains are all coming down to the exact same locations they come to now, so there's no reason for subsurface disturbance of any kind. They'll have to monkey around with the actual downspouts, but they're going to come down in the exact same locations they come down now.
Thank you. There's no fixed stair to the attic, correct?
That's correct. Down? Pull down stair only.
Single family use only?
Single family use only.
And then how about generators or AC condensers?
I have to go back and look at the survey because I don't recall there being either. So,
this is a through lot, right?
It's a through lot from Auditorium to Hooper. The AC is located at the south end. There is no generator currently and none proposed that I'm aware of.
So there's no additional AC condenser going in?
It will go in the same location as where the existing one is now.
Thank you.
Adjacent to it.
Thank you.
We apologize on the Gagnon proper. I personally wasn't aware of any traffic disturbance either. That's unfortunate.
I don't think you would know. I think it was just like contractors coming up there and saying, I need to do this real quick, and so I'm going to shut down the road. I don't think it was the tenant's fault, but it's a small road and there's equipment that needs to be there. It is challenging.
Smaller yards and steep slopes.
Yep. But I think it's a necessary evil sometimes.
Any questions from board members as to this witness as to architecture or any of the engineering items he's discussed? Any questions from the public of this witness at this point?
All right. Switching to your planner's hat, Mr. Simpson, would you describe to the board the variances that the applicant needs to obtain this evening?
Sure. The variances that we need are for the pre-existing non-conformities. Allowing the existing building coverage to remain unchanged, 15.6%, where 15% is allowed, and to allow the existing front setback to remain unchanged at 8.2 feet, although we are extending it vertically at that corner, and to allow the existing lot circle diameter of 50 feet to remain unchanged, where 65 feet is required.
All right. So I want you to briefly go over the legal standard, positive and negative criteria for the board. They heard it earlier this evening. They're a very experienced board, so we will not dwell on it much. But before we do, I just want to verify as to the building coverage. We're not proposing to increase that at all. That's the existing condition.
That's correct.
As to the lot circle diameter, that's existing, and that's the product of the existing lot, which is not getting any smaller, correct?
That is correct.
And as to the setback, as we said earlier, I might have proffered it. I just needed the testimony to back it up from you. It's 8.2 presently, proposed to remain 8.2, albeit with an extra partial story within the existing footprint of the structure, and then that non-habitable attic above that, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Would you review the legal standard for the variance?
Sure. There's two tests. The first is that due to the lot's unique shape or topographic conditions, or a result of pre-existing conditions, the strict application of the ordinance results and peculiar and exceptional practical difficulties or undue hardship upon the applicant, such that the relief is warranted. This is commonly referred to, as we discussed earlier, or as was discussed earlier, as a C1 hardship variance. The second is what is known as a flexible C variance, where the purposes of the land use law are advanced by deviation of the ordinance requirements, and benefits of the deviation substantially outweigh any detriments. Both standards need to satisfy a negative criteria, that there's no substantial detrimental impact on the public good and that the requested relief would not substantially impair the intent or purpose of the zone plan or zoning ordinance.
Okay, great. Would you address each of those criteria, starting with the positive for the board?
Sure. The existing front setback is product of the slopes of the lot, which force the building envelope closer to Hooper than is otherwise allowable by ordinance. This pre-existed the applicant's ownership of the property. The thing was built in the 70s, and that was how they could fit it onto the lot. It's a C1 hardship tied to the topographical conditions. For review of the steep slope plan, you can see the home is virtually surrounded by 30% or greater steep slopes along the rear and right-hand side.
I just want to stop you for a second.
Sure.
Throw it up on the easel, and maybe you could show the board where those 30% slopes are.
Yeah, we've got really, literally 30% slopes surrounding the house. Trying to take anything east or south is going to impact those, and especially if what you wanted to do was somehow or other preserve this 8'2" setback and move everything south. Structurally, the only way the equivalent addition could be done is to start impacting the downhill slopes. You would have to cantilever out in a way that you really can't cantilever, so you'd have to start adding foundations and disturbance on the south. And the southeast corners. So by going directly up, we mitigate that problem altogether, and we just stay within the foundation that exists there now.
Okay. You spoke to the C1 hardship. I think I interrupted your flow a little bit.
That's quite all right.
Tying it to the slopes. Would you be able to address the C2, the flexible C standard, and discuss the balancing aspects of this application that militate in favor of the relief?
Sure. Again, just sort of finishing up the rest of my other testimony, which is the building coverage is similarly influenced by the slopes. Because the lot drops off at the rear, there's very little usable space for a yard. We can't really shrink the house in any way that makes any kind of the sense that we're really going to get a reduction of building coverage. It would complicate all those steep slope issues. The lot circle is the lot circle. It's a product of the size and shape of the lot. That wasn't created by this applicant and was obviously approved by somebody somewhere sometime in the history of Atlantic Highlands. Variances can be granted without such substantial detriment to the public good in the following ways. I don't really see any detriment in connection with the variances. The building coverage is an existing condition. It is not proposed to change whatsoever and is not presently resulting in any substantial detriment to the public good or substantially impairing the zone plan or zoning ordinance. The front setback is existing. We're proposing a single-story vertical expansion where the improvements remain within that 8.2-foot setback. I don't see any detriment for the following reasons. The home is screened from the site by landscaping. The home will be within the allowable height and feet and stories, and in fact, is much more with the addition in compatibility with neighboring homes. The home is currently set below the line of the road, so the second story will not as be as obvious or impactful. The homes across the street are set back substantially and located on higher ground, meaning that they look down on this home, and further mitigates any impact on those, on that setback. I would note further that this type of modest front setback is common of much of Hooper Avenue and Atlantic Highlands as a whole. Steep slopes on the side of Hooper Avenue make this condition quite typical. The alternative would be extreme cut and fill, or the need to resort to extreme engineering solutions like cantilevers. Additionally, the single-story ranch-style home is out of character for the neighborhood. Most of the homes present as two, two and a half, or even three stories. The addition actually harmonizes the look of the home with its surroundings. While the look of this is kind of a 70s ranch housey kind of a thing, as you already know, the neighborhood is much more that early 20th century, late 19th century appearance, and so this will gather more of that look.
Mr. Simpson, real quick, and not to, to interrupt your flow on this, but is it also my understanding that the front lot line is not set right at the curb, meaning that there's grass and...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Between the paved right-of-way and the home?
Yeah, I think these photographs are really the great demonstration of that. I mean, right now, and this will not get any less after the addition, if you're on the uphill side of this house, you can literally come down from the upper street and not even know the house is there. That condition is liked by the homeowners, and they want to keep it. So at best, you'll get a peekaboo effect of the second story through the trees coming down from the upper street. Coming up the street, as you can see from looking south on Hooper Avenue, you have this great expanse of yards between both 39 Hooper and its adjacent property, as well as the landscaping that does exist there already. So again, the house is here now. It'll pop up a little bit above that, but it'll be much more like the other homes along that side of Hooper Avenue.
And I think you were going to address your balancing test then, the C2.
Yes. As an alternative to the C1 hardship variance, I can very easily see these variances being granted under a C2 balancing test because the variances can be granted free from any detriment and because the benefits of the plan include promoting public safety by refraining from disturbing the steep slopes on the site, providing light, air, and open space, promoting a desirable visual environment, promoting conservation of open space and natural resources in the form of the wooded hillside that we are leaving undisturbed, and promoting efficient use of the land under NJSA 40:55D-2A(c)(i)(j) and N.
Are there any questions for Mr. Simpson in his capacity as a professional planner?
I believe all items were discussed and testimony was provided. I would ask one final clarification on existing square footage of the home versus proposed square footage. I don't believe, I'm sorry if I missed it, I don't know if it was provided.
That's a really good question and one that I think helps me to address a point that we did not mention, which is to say Mr. Simpson revisited his calculations today and realized he had included a portion of the cellar in his UFAR calculations. Your ordinance says to include a portion of a basement, but not a cellar. So even though we comply, I think we had inadvertently overstated some things. So maybe you can address Mr. Rohmeyer's question and also correct that misstatement.
Sure. So our zoning schedule was derived initially trying to be as conservative as we possibly could in the possibility that you would determine that it was not a basement, that it, you know, or excuse me, that it was not a cellar but a basement. We did our math on the original calculation on the basis that we would count half of that basement as part of the square footage. Under the ordinance for the minimum gross floor area of existing houses, house, you would need to have 1,800 square feet, and this house is at 1,556. and that with the changes, the entire gross floor area of the house would be at 2672.
So proposed dwelling, 2672 square feet?
Yes.
And just for clarification for the board's record, the 1556, is that just the first floor?
Yes.
And the 2672, that is just the first and second, and the ordinance tells us not to look at the cellar and not to look at the non-habitable attic, is that right?
That is correct. I have a zoning schedule that reflects that, that is not the same as the original, and I can provide a copy of that to everybody as well.
If you want to mark it, Mr. Seib, we're up to A13. Revised zoning schedule, is there a date on that, Mr. Simpson?
It's dated 8/5/25.
Does everybody have a copy? Or...
I can always email.
Any further questions? Any questions from the board? Are there any questions or comments from any members of the public? Hearing none, it's anything further that you want to add?
And I would just be extremely quick. I think the board is pretty cognizant of the conditions up there. It is a very steeply sloped lot, like all the surroundings, all the surrounding lots. Why it's in your steep slope zone. We evaded or escaped the steep slope review because we're not disturbing those slopes. That was absolutely intentional. We have no desire to create any disturbance on the slopes. Not needed. We can go up in place. We're fortunate that this is a single-story home, so we're really only adding a second story. Very much in keeping with the existing surroundings, all of which are two or three story homes, as Mr. Simpson testified. The setback of the 8.2 is very consistent. If you go up and down that stretch of Hooper, many of the homes are set right up against the road, including the Gagnon home that you had extensive experience on and ultimately approved. Not solely that one, many of the neighbors had the same condition because they have a drop-off in their backyard of Auditorium Drive, or even the ones on the uphill side, on the Gagnon side. Just deal with steep slopes behind the homes. They're all set right up against the road. I truthfully don't think it creates any detriment. For us, it's an existing condition. It's in keeping with the existing pattern of development. You heard that we're largely below the line of the road. There's the additional setback beyond our front setback in between the curb line. There's ample landscaping. No one's here, though they all received notice. Nobody's here to speak negatively of it. The homes across the street, the ones that could potentially be impacted by it, all look down on us from a much higher vantage point. So even though we're within height and feet and stories, I would submit to you that we're not, hurting anybody's view or anything like that. It really is a question of the setback predominantly. The building coverage is what it is. It's not proposed to change. And the same with the lot circle diameter. And I believe that Mr. Simpson hit the nail on the head when he spoke to the C1, the slopes, and why they force us closer to the road, and the inability to expand horizontally and dictating the need to go vertically in that position within the footprint, bringing that setback of 8.2 just a story higher. The C2 criteria I felt were pretty self-evident when I looked at 40:55D-2. I mean, we really just don't want to destroy or disturb slopes. We don't want to take down mature wooded vegetation on a hillside. I don't think your ordinance would want us to do that. That's not consistent with your master plan. So we found a nice way to create the additional reasonable living space for this 2,672 square foot house for the family, keep them in the area, keep them in the neighborhood they love without being a detriment to anybody, and in a way that I think creates a nice plan that's visually appealing, that harmonizes with the neighborhood. And I do think it's pretty self-evident that the benefits of this particular plan substantially outweigh any detriments.
Yes, sir.
My name is Richard Dowse. I live with One Chapin Avenue, and my house just above this house. I have a view looking down on it.
Mr. Dowse, we asked for public comment. We're gonna allow you to pass that. But if you're gonna give comments, please raise your right hand and be sworn. Do you either swear or affirm that any testimony that you give in connection with this proceeding, you the truth, all truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
And again, your name and address?
Richard Dowse, One Chapin Avenue.
Thank you. Go ahead.
I live just above Lee and Leslie. I think they moved into this house about 4 or 5 years ago, and they turned what was arguably an eyesore into something that looks really great. And I think that I would hate to lose them as a neighbor because they do great stuff. And I would like to, I hope that the board would agree that this is a good thing for the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else before we turn it over to the board? Let's hear from board discussion, and when you're ready, a motion.
I think it looks like every house in that area is going to be beautiful. I have no issues based on the testimony that was given today.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're not messing with the steep slope at all. I'm just going vertical, and there's no other issues that involve with the steep slope and all that. And the drainage also not being an issue.
Not being an issue. And Mr. Palomares, being a contractor, won't shut down the street, so we can put that in there.
No, I think it's an improvement. I think it'll be more in keeping with what the neighborhood looks like because no offense, it's a lovely home, but it looks odd compared to the other homes in the area right now. Right? It almost looks like a miniature house, like it's sunk down. So I think it's definitely a nice design of what the future design will look like.
I think it's an improvement as well. I definitely like the fact that it's not impacting any steep slope. However, I do... As I sit here and listen to this, I understand we have to look at it one application at a time. I do, however, I get confused because no one impacts the steep slope in particular. What is the cumulative effect? Like I sit here and think, and maybe this isn't appropriate, but I think of testimony like there's no pressure added. I just don't understand how, if I put a third level on top of my house, that wouldn't add pressure to my footings. So, this particular application may not be the one to raise this to, but I guess I just want to comment that I don't understand if we don't know who's impacting this slope and causing disturbances, I have to believe it's a collective thing, and we've got to think about, in 1901, somebody built a three-story home, but, at what point when we build another three-story home, is it impacting that? I don't know. That's not my area of expertise.
That's a really good question and concern. I think that's why every time a packet comes up on the steep slope, we ask the same things, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's your drainage plan? Do you have adequate drainage now? Mm-hmm. Are you improving that drainage? Because there are areas that are impacted, like Auditorium Drive, and not to say it's them, but it is, it's degrading, and you can see that, and where that's coming from, we don't know, but, I think we can do is ask those questions and verify that the packets that come before us are not impacting it. So by process of elimination, maybe determining before ultimate failure.
But at some point, like, I understand water may impact things, but does weight impact?
That was one of my concerns, too, and that's why the gentleman did an analysis on the foundation.
He did a calculation.
That was my worry, too.
Yeah.
And he calculated the weight of the building, and then they did a boring to see what the capacity of the soil was, and it all worked out.
I guess maybe I'm silly, but I think if I gain 10 pounds, my knees are impacted.
Just as a point where your concerns are legitimate and justified, the applicant has to comply with the ordinance.
Of course.
They're complying with the ordinance. They don't require steep slope relief on the ordinance. Steep slope doesn't impact on what they're doing.
Right. And I tried to preface that. I understand this.
It's a good point overall. Maybe something that we can address holistically when we do a new master plan. Mr. Neff wants to leave that up. I said, maybe something we can address when we do a new master plan, which you'll be leading up.
What was that?
It's something you could also address if you desire in your annual report.
Ultimately, you rely on the professionals to give you the analysis, and that's kind of open base. That's why the proper questions are important. Although a lot of us don't know the technical terms for, you know, all the soil boring and all that stuff. It's written. You can read it. They either pass or they don't. You know, a professional who's been doing it for 30 years says it's sufficient. You know, as a guy who builds houses, you kind of have to take their word for it that it's going to be sufficient. Ultimately, I'm sure you're going to have some mishaps here and there, but you rely on the professionals to make sure that it's, you know, what they're saying is correct. It's been proven in true testimony that it's pretty, what they're saying, good enough. But I understand what you're saying. It's, every house is different, but they're all sitting on the same piece of land. Some people get the steep slope, into the steep slope situation that are not nearly as steep as that. They're completely flat, but they're in the swamping area, so it changes everything. And that's what we rely on the professionals for, to figure out what's underneath the house and where it's affected differently.
And if it can be constructed in that area, which they have proven. And there are houses like very similar to them, even bigger, that are like in their area. But cumulatively, you can see just across our slope, you know, on ocean, that there's failure, right? And why is that? Because of the construction that goes above it and above it and above it. So we want to make sure that we protect, you know, the neighbors and the client and the individuals that are actually doing the work by at least asking a question. And like previous testimony, she was kind of failed by her contractor, right? So, you know, sometimes the professionals don't give you reliable information, but I feel comfortable with this one. You want to make a motion?
To accept?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not to tell you what to do, but.
You just did.
I did.
A second.
Mr. Rowley?
Yes.
Ms. DePasca?
Yes.
Dr. Zuzalak?
Yes.
Mr. Curtis?
Yes.
Mr. Nappi?
Yes.
Ms. Walter?
Yes.
Mr. Bearmore?
Yes.
Mr. Varela?
Yes.
Thank you.
Approved.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, the number 10 on the agenda says executive session, but I understand that's going to be carried to the next meeting, so that's not an order of business for this evening, and the final order of business is a request for a motion to adjourn. Second.
Request for a motion to adjourn.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Do you need a motion?
No. Thank you. Introduce it. I like to study today.